Now be recorded.
Okay, I want to welcome everybody to the Florida Building Commission's Electrical Technical Advisory Committee meeting of October 6, 2022. A quick reminder about participation in the virtual world. Please keep your device on mute. If you're using a phone, please don't put it on hold, but do put it on mute. Be aware of background noise. Please wait to speak until you're offered an opportunity to do so. Please state your name each time you speak. And TAC members, please state your name when making and seconding motions. Our public comment opportunities will be, as always, 3 minutes. That's the primary piece. Next order of business is to determine that we have a quorum. Commissioner Fisher, Chuck.
Here.
Okay. Neil Burdick. Ken Castronovo.
I'm here.
Vincent Delacroix.
I'm here. Can I ask the name?
Shane Gerwig.
Here.
Okay. John Hall.
Here.
Brian Holland.
I am present. Thank you.
Okay. David Wright.
I'm here.
Joe Chirito.
Here.
Clarence Tibbs.
I'm here.
And Roy Van Dyke. Van Wick. Okay, well, just checking one more time if Neil's on. Otherwise, we have 9 of 11 constituting a quorum. So that's good, and we will proceed. Just want to acknowledge we have Tom Campbell, Mo Madani, Justin Vogel, Jim Hammer, Sabrina Evans, Marlena Peters, and Joe Bigelow on from DBPR. Okay, so today's agenda is to approve the minutes from the June 23rd meeting and to review and make recommendations on the comments submitted on your recommendations to the commission for their consideration at the December meeting. Unless there's any, and to take public comment at the end if there is any. If there isn't any questions, I'll ask for a motion to approve the agenda by name.
Jim, I'll approve the motion.
All right, we have Hall. Who made the second?
Tibbs.
All right, Hall and Tibbs respectively. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. All right, the June 23rd, 2022 minutes were posted electronically. Unless anybody has any corrections or additions to that, I would ask for a motion to accept the meeting minutes as posted by name.
Motion to approve the minutes.
All right, Hall and Holland, respectively. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. All right, well, without further ado, let's jump into the business at hand. I'm going to go over the process pretty quickly. We're all fairly familiar with it. As always, public comment is 3 minutes. I'll go through each of these in order, the 6 comments, and let the proponent who made the comment speak first. I'll ask if anybody else wants to speak in favor, anybody in opposition. If there are pros and cons, then we will allow one single collective 2-minute rebuttal, one for the pro side, one for the con side. Other proponents and opponents are welcome just to say I support or I don't support. If you don't want to make a detailed comment, provides the TAC with perspective on stakeholders' perspectives. Proponents are free to withdraw their comment before the TAC takes action. After we hear from the public input on each of the comments, I'll ask the TAC for an action. You'll either make a motion to approve the comment and amend your previous recommendation, or to deny the comment and retain your previous recommendation. So if you vote in favor of the comment, that would amend your previous action, and if you vote to deny it, that retains whatever your previous action was, whether it was to approve or deny. In this case, all the ones you're considering were all voted, your initial recommendation was for denial. Okay. We're asking TAC not to revise or amend the amendment in any way. If you have suggestions for the opponent, you're free to make those, and it's up to them to decide whether they want to make any changes in the request that a commissioner would pull one off the consent agenda. It's a 2-thirds vote requirement for this portion of what we're doing, the code process. So with 9 members, it would be a 6-3 to pass, and a 5-4 would be the fail threshold. The commission will take up the recommendations on two consent agendas, one for denial, one for approval, and then recommendations for individual consideration. If an individual stakeholder wishes to request that a commissioner pull off of either the consent agendas for approval or denial any specific amendment, they must do so by November 22nd, 2022. We need to get that into Mo Madani by November 22nd. It'll be up to the commission at the December meeting to decide whether they wish to pull those based on comment. It's their choice. Any commissioner may pull any they desire. And so that's the process. Anybody have any questions on the process? Okay, Mo, I'm going to turn it to you then to go over the documents, and then we'll start off after that. Mo, we're seeing your screen, but we're not hearing you speak. If you're speaking, I think you're on mute. Mo, we're not hearing you. I think I saw Marlita head in to talk to them.
Can you hear me?
Now we hear you.
All right, okay. I'm not sure what happens here. Let's move this here a little bit. As you see from the agenda, you should be able under item number 4 to, click on the link there, and that will take you to the metrics that you see on the screen. The metrics really consists of all the code changes that have received comments from the general interest group, mainly general comments or alternate language, which is mainly comments on the tax recommendation. And that's really, we're talking about only those comments received within the second 45-day comment period. And if, as you see from the metrics, we have all the tags that have, where their code changes have, or their recommendation have received comments. The electrical tag, as you see, there is the agenda, there is the detail report, and the tracking chart. The tracking chart is similar to what we have used before for the, so it, you know, give you a summary of the code change and et cetera. So, and for you to add notes to it if you like. The detail report is what we're going to be used at this meeting to review the code changes. And the detail report is really structured similar way to what we did in June. So you see here from the detail report, it tells you that there is 6 code changes that received comments during the second 45-day comment period. And as from the structure, you will see that it tells you what was the stack actions of, in June. So in this fourth section, for example, code change E10316, it was denied. And here, I think from the highlight, you see that it tells us there is the general comment submitted on this code change. So if you scroll down, you will see there's a general comment submitted G1 from during the second comment period. So that's, so you will see that, the history and all that. And after that, you will see the tax amount, what was really submitted originally during the course of mill. Now, if you go down, you'll see the attachment and everything. So, and also, if you want to skip all this literature and all that, just do Control F and put in the number of the code change. That will skip all the, you know, the literature and all that and so on. Any question on the detail reports? I'll be glad to answer. Otherwise, Jeff, go ahead, proceed. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mo. So first we have number 10316, and the original proponent, you, of course, you had voted originally to deny this, was Dallas Tyson, and he has a G1 comment. So I'll go to the public, and Dallas, are you on?
Yes, I am.
All right, you have 3 minutes. Go ahead and introduce yourself by name and representation, and we'll proceed.
Okay. Dallas Tyson on behalf of the Florida Swimming Pool Association. I submitted this comment to reinvigorate the debate around this this proposal. This proposal, well, the proposal here is to eliminate the exempt the spas from the NEC's emergency spa shutoff requirement that is in Florida, specifically for the reason that it is redundant. As far as safety is concerned, and the negative effects of nuisance trips cost pool operators time, money, and can create potential safety hazards in Florida spas. So Florida spas, pools and spas have been on gravity drain systems since the 1970s. Gravity drain systems are extremely effective at preventing entrapment by drain outlets, and requirement to have a secondary safety shutoff is, they said, it is unnecessary with a gravity drain system. Additionally, the Federal Virginia Graham-Baker Act between the gravity drain systems and the Federal Virginia Graham-Baker Act was mandates the types of drain coverings that pools and spas must have. When you have these two together, a suction entrapment event is statistically impossible or nearly impossible, and so it's completely unnecessary. What happens with the nuisance cutoffs is the spa completely gets stopped. It creates a situation where bacteria and other pathogens are allowed to fester and grow until a pool operator or pool professional get out to restart the spa. So we believe the shutoff requirement is unnecessary. To address concerns from the first time around, we don't believe that this exception needs to rest in both the Fire Prevention Code and the Florida Building Code. While the Fire Prevention Code commercial does reference the NEC, the Fire Prevention Code is not where people are going to find pool and spa standards. So I believe this exception properly rests within the Florida Building Code, in the pool section of the Florida Building Code. This is where people are going to look for, where customers, where operators, where building professionals, where code professionals are going to look for requirements of pools and spas in the state of Florida. And lastly, we are this amendment is also being proposed as a tentative interim amendment to the 2020 and 2023 NEC, which will the 2020 NEC will be come effective in Florida with the Florida 2023 Florida Building Code. So we're working with the NFPA on this as well to put this into the NEC, but we'd like to see it here in Florida as well. Thank you. And please, I would please ask the committee to reverse its prior decision and to give an affirmative recommendation for this proposal. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Belcher.
Go ahead, Mr. Belcher. Joe
Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association. We're supporting the Swimming Pool Association in this proposal to reverse the tax original recommendation. Our big concern was the possibility of the bacteria and disease, that sort of thing, as was mentioned by Mr. Tyson. So we request that you approve the comment and reverse the original denial. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Hey, Jeff, Mo, I need to speak whenever it's on.
Okay. As soon as public comment's over, unless it's important to be announced, up to you, but...
Michael Weinbaum, Martin Aquatic Design and Engineering. We just echo everything that Dallas said. We have heard it from our clients and from our owners that these emergency switches are a big headache for operators for all the reasons Dallas cited. You know, it is real. They really are being tripped by uninformed children who think it's a game and that kind of a thing.
Okay. Anybody else wish to speak in support of the comment? All right, does anybody from the public wish to speak in opposition?
Jamie Gaskin.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Jamie Gaskin, Miami-Dade County. Speaking in opposition, requesting the TAC to uphold previous action for denial. This is something that is squarely in the face of safety, and if kids are effectively having this device trip, it's something of concerns and continues to be a concern that these recirculation systems have these safety features installed. So uphold your previous action to deny this change. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in opposition? All right, Dallas, as the proponent, do you want a rebuttal opportunity?
I would just reiterate that the gravity flow systems that are mandated on Florida spas are exceptionally safe. I've attached information from reputable sources to this comment that outlines how and why the gravity systems offer, how they operate, and why they were mandated in Florida back in the 70s. And as I said, we're all for layers of safety and protection about anything that's going to potentially be harmful to somebody. But in this situation, it's not just an extra layer of protection. These nuisance trips actually cause potential health and safety issues with the growth of bacteria, with waterborne illnesses that can grow and can fester when circulation is cut off from a spa, especially in Florida, especially in the summer, and especially where the water temperature is being kept so hot. So we believe it is a safety issue, and this is we're removing a redundancy that potentially creates more harm than it reduces harm.
All right, Jamie, as the sole opponent, do you wish a rebuttal opportunity?
Just 2 points. I think that this can hold off until NEC synchronizes these requirements in their standard, and then Florida can pick it up in the future as a new NEC version.
All right, thank you, Jamie. Thank you for public comment. Where public comment is closed, we come to the TAC. You have a choice of making a motion to approve the comment. Just a second. So your choices are to either approve it and reverse your thing or to deny it and retain it. Go ahead, Mo.
Yes, this is Mo Madani. I think really at the meeting when this came up, we did have a concern, the fact that this is mainly an amendment to the NEC. And as you know, the NEC is also adopted by the Florida Fire Prevention Code. And when you amend the NEC, you are creating mainly a conflict with the Florida Fire Prevention Code, except if really the same amendment is taking place through the Florida Fire Prevention Code. I think this has been the case, and actually I had discussion also with the State Fire Marshal, and they concur that the two codes need to be consistent. So I think really that the potential of approving this is that, first of all, if the NEC at the Florida Fire Prevention Code side has not been amended, this will not make any difference because it's going to be required under the NEC as adopted by the Florida Fire Prevention Code. With us, we always want to be consistent, not create conflict. So this has the potential to really creating a conflict between the two codes. Thank you.
Thanks, Mo. All right, TAC members, you've heard the public testimony. You've also heard from Mo. then I will turn it to you for what you wish to do, either to approve it and amend your previous action, or to deny it and affirm your denial, if you will. TAC members.
Could I make a comment, please? John Hall.
Sure, John.
My reservation with this is that the NEC section that's being referenced does not say a word about the drainage system. It applies only to the recirculation system and jet system. And so I stand for the action that the TAC took originally. I think we did the right thing.
All right. Feel free to make a motion if you'd like. Otherwise, I'll go on. Is there any other additional TAC comments before a motion's made?
Question for staff is Shane Gerwig.
Sure, Shane, go ahead.
Mo, was this heard by the pool TAC?
Yes.
What was their previous action? I know, I don't believe
denied. It was denied.
It was denied? Okay, very good.
All right. I'd look for a motion, TAC members.
Motion denied public comment. Holland.
Second by Hall.
We have a motion and a second for denial on the comment from Holland and Hall, respectively. Any further discussion on the motion?
Yes, sir. This is Brian. I'll say that I agree with Mr. Gascon's comments that we'll see what happens with the TIA. If we can get the TIA through, and COVID Channel 17 at the NEC agrees that this is an unnecessary emergency disconnect, then I'll be the first one in line to ask the commission during the rule hearing to reconsider this modification for Florida specific, assuming it makes it into the 2020 NEC. So I feel we just have the cart before the horse. I know where we're going with this. If it gets into the NEC, we're just a little ahead of the game. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments before I call for the vote? All right, TAC members, all in favor of the motion to deny and affirm your previous action, say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? The motion is unanimous for denial, which retains your previous recommendation, so it remains for denial. All right, we move on now to 10220, and Chuck Fisher has an alternative language to this proposal. And so, Chuck, I'll give you your 3 minutes first as a public person. We'll hear from pros and cons, and then we come back to the TAC. Of course, you're free to discuss it as you desire. Go ahead, Chuck.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Commissioner Fisher. The reason this came up originally was because of the nuisance tripping on the hard fault breakers. As an electrical contractor myself, I've experienced it just like the original proposer. But it became clear, you know, during our last meeting that there were members that were, not in favor of eliminating the arc fault requirement in its entirety. Most of the nuisance tripping seems to be coming from lighting and smart appliances in the kitchen. There's just a compatibility issue. The AFCA technology and the standards, they haven't been properly married with the equipment standards. And what's happening is it's causing nuisance tripping in the arc fault. As a result, it costs a ton of money for contractors, for owners. And in the end, what's happening is people are just replacing them with standard breakers. And that's really eliminating, the whole reason for the arc fault. So what I did was I proposed alternate language that basically keeps most of the arc fault requirements in place for general use receptacles, but eliminates the requirement for outlets, lighting outlets, and it eliminates the requirement in kitchens where we're experiencing a lot of issues with smart appliances. So hopefully by doing that, created a scenario where we can still maintain the arc fault safety, but also eliminate the nuisance tripping. So I'm hoping that everybody sees it that way, and that my proposal is to go ahead and approve the alternate language that I put forth. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Commissioner. All right. Does anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the amendment?
Belcher.
Belcher, go ahead.
Joe Belcher, Florida Homebuilders Association. For all the reasons mentioned by Commissioner Fisher, we support this change. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment?
Amanda Hickman.
Go ahead, Amanda.
Amanda Hickman, the Hickman Group, on behalf of Leading Builders of America, and we support this alternative language comment, and this is a real issue, and I think this is a good resolution, so we support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment? All right. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak in opposition to the comment? I hear none, so we'll, no additional public comment. We'll come now to the TAC for your consideration. TAC members?
Yes, I need to talk to you. Okay.
Sure. Okay, go ahead, Mom.
Okay. Yeah, same thing, really, what I said earlier. We have an issue here, which is really the amending the NEC for commercial buildings, which, as you know, for the fire prevention code, adopt the NEC by reference, and also it applies to commercial buildings. So amending the NEC from the building code side, that's going to create a conflict with the Florida Fire Prevention Code. Similar to what was said before, we want to be consistent. And so if it's an amendment needs to be take place here, it should also take place at the Florida Fire Prevention Code side. So thank you.
Thanks,
Mo. I have a comment with regards to what you just said, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Commercial amendment, this is dealing with residential applications, correct?
But it is an amendment to the Florida Building Code building. I know there's an amendment to the Florida Building Code residential, which is, I don't have any problem with that, but this is strictly in the building, which the Florida Building Code building applies to commercial buildings and also, which is really fall within the scope of the Florida Fire Prevention Code.
Jeff Schinger, we have a question or more comment than anything.
Okay, go ahead, Shane.
Jeff, Mr. Chairman, taking a look at this and listening to what Mo says, you know, I can see where he's coming from, but I really don't believe it's going to create a conflict. The reason why I think it's going to create a more stringent of the two, where therefore, if we wind up taking it and removing the language out of the National Electric Code at the Florida Building Code side, that it would apply to one and two family dwellings. However, whenever this particular code would be enforced as referenced by the Florida Fire Prevention Code, it would be enforced under the commercial building. So I believe that if we wind up taking that language out here, it doesn't really affect anything to do with the commercial buildings because it becomes a more stringent of the two. So even though we use the reference standards, that the National Electric Code is a reference standard under the Florida Building Code, it's still incorporated into the language of the Florida Building Code, just as the language is incorporated into the Florida Fire Prevention Code. So basically what we have here is we just have two different standards. They don't conflict each other. However, we run into a situation where in a commercial building, whatever would be enforced and within the scope of the Florida Fire Prevention Code in the commercial building, that section would still apply as it's associated with the Florida Fire Prevention Code. So if we take that language out, I don't believe it's going to hurt anything because I think that everything's still applicable.
Hey, Shane, if it's through the Jeff and all that, if you look at the code section, 210.12, the dwelling unit is not limited to one and two family dwelling. Dwelling units limited to apartment buildings, commercial type buildings, dormitory units. That's not part of the residential code. So you are really making an amendment to the NEC as it relates to those buildings covered by the Florida Fire Prevention Code. There is an amendment. Code change already in for residential, for single.
It's the last one we take today. Okay.
Respectfully, I understand what you're saying and I understand the applicability, but my point here is that if we wind up taking the language out, it's still in the National Electric Code as adopted by the Florida State Fire Marshal. So if it's adopted as a reference standard by the Fire Marshal's office, we're still good, meaning the standards are still going to apply to the commercial structures, such as the dwelling units that fall within anything other than a one or two family dwelling. However, the residential side of things, the one or two family dwellings, aren't enforced by the aren't provided under the Florida Fire Prevention Code. So if we make this change, it will still work and it'll still stay consistent. And then it's not a conflict then, it's a more stringent of the two then.
Okay. All right, TAC members, is everybody ready to make a motion?
Motion to deny.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second, Delacross.
I have a motion and a second to deny. Go ahead, Joe.
Brian, are there any technical amendments that are being considered or proposed to the National Electrical Code to address this problem? Because I like to be consistent and adopt the National Electrical Code, but in this case, aren't we dealing with a situation where technology has outstripped the codes, and we've got situations, I think we're going to run into it with arc fault as well as ground fault situations, where the new technologies that are out there are causing products not to work. So contractors are put in a position to be caught between a rock and a hard place, and customers don't understand that. And, you know, it puts building officials in a bad situation, too, because Commissioner Fisher, you might elaborate on what you found when you were involved in your research. You said that there weren't products that could work with the equipment that's installed. So what's the option there when we're faced with those kind of decisions?
Chuck, do you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Sure. I spent 2 days with one of the major switchgear manufacturers on a project that we did in an area in Palm Beach County. And I can tell you the products, the manufacturers, the issues that caused a nuisance trip. And those products are still sold today. They're known issues. When you call product support, they'll basically say, do you have it on an arc fault circuit? Yeah, well, our stuff won't work. And these are products that anybody can walk into, any appliance store, any lighting store, walk out with. They're listed products. They just are not compatible with arc fault. Now, some manufacturers are a little better at others. One manufacturer's arc fault may not trip with X product, and the other manufacturers might not trip with Y product. But there's major issues out there with this. And it's the same issues that we're going to take up and one of the code mods is coming up here soon with the GFI protection for the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning equipment. There's just compatibility issues. So, you know, something needs to be done about it, and that's why I think this alternate language that I proposed kind of, you know, makes both sides happy, so to speak. Okay.
Comments?
Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, sir. So, speaking in support of the motion, there's problems with the amended or the alternate language as it stands. If you delete outlets and devices, you lose switches that supply outlets in other spaces that are connected to the same branch circuit. You also lose more than just lighting outlets. You lose ceiling fans, smoke alarms, CO alarms, all supplied by the same exact branch circuit, wired methods and materials that are subject to arcing faults that could start a fire. Also, there are no general use receptacles. It's not identified. That term is not used in the NEC at all, certainly not defined. So I think it's going to call into question is what's intended as general use receptacles versus any other receptacle that's not used in the code. And with the kitchen strikeout, in part A, we got to remember that if you think about kitchens, they're just inside the dwelling that's with the same exact construction using the same exact wire methods. Typically, the panel board's located either outdoors in a garage. Your branch circuits go up, over, down, or down, over, up, and they're in the same walls, they're in the same attic spaces, they're in the same product space of all these other locations. So the magic of AFCI protection is it's protecting the wired message material, not the load. That's only part of it. So what you're supplying, the appliance or utilization equipment, is a part of it, but it's the nail through the NM cable in the wall that just happens to be supplying the kitchen. So AFCI technology is agnostic to the location. It's unfortunate that the sections are built this way. I would just mention that what I find curious is if we take our neighbor to the north, Georgia, they've adopted the 2020 over a year ago, no AFCI amendments, no complaints. The state of Texas adopted the 2020, no AFCI amendments. In fact, they're in the process to adopt the 2023, no AFCI amendments. So Texas and Georgia are very similar in terms of climate, in terms of supply chain, and in terms of construction levels. Texas probably built more homes than Florida. So interestingly, I'm wondering why we're not having the problems there in only here in Florida. I don't think electricity works that way. So all these proposals in similar nature have been gone in front of Codemaking Panel 2. Codemaking Panel 2 has rejected them. That includes Underwriters Laboratories, that includes the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The 2023 does not have any amendments of this nature. So I definitely think that we would be reducing safety, increasing the occurrence of fire, and there are a large number of compatibility task force, both at the NFPA, at NEMA, and within NEMA and outside organizations. So NEMA has a harmonization group with AHAM and AHRI to deal with compatibility issues within their standards. And on many occasions, we update those product standards to reflect these compatibility issues when they arrive. But in the meanwhile, we're still using NM cable. We still have combustible construction. We have no sprinklers inside dwellings. And we're now going to, you know, stop supplying smoke alarms with AFCI protection when that branch circuit wiring could start a fire, and that's problematic. So speaking in support of our original action, to keep it as the code is published. Thank you.
All right, TAC members, any final discussion? I think we've heard both sides quite a few times before I call the vote. All right.
Comment, please. No press.
All right. Go ahead.
I'd just like to note that AFCI devices trip requirements in their product standard, which is UL 1699, the standard for safety of AFCIs. That's the title of it. That standard is 113 pages long, and 53 of those pages of the 113 are testing required for these devices to meet, to get listed, and those tests include things like testing for humidity, leakage current, voltage surges, arc fault detection, unwanted tripping, dielectric voltage withstand, over voltage, overload, endurance, surge currents, short circuit currents, crushing, dust, and I probably left a few out. So concerns concerning the operation and functionality of AFCIs really need to be directed to the standards technical panel for UL 1699, not this technical advisory committee. Thank you.
Right. I'm going to go ahead and take the vote now because I think the die is capped, if you will. I'm going to ask you yes or no by name. The motion is to deny. If you support it, you would vote yes. If you're against denial, then you would vote no. Commissioner Fisher.
I'm in support of the alternate language.
So you would vote no in this case. You're against. The motion was to deny your comment.
Yes, I'm against the motion.
Right. That's why I wanted to explain, because I know it's a little confusing. All right, Ken, what's your vote, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, and that's to affirm previous action of denial. Vince, your vote?
Support the motion.
Okay. Shane?
Against the motion.
Okay. John?
I support the motion.
Okay. Brian?
Yes, support the motion.
David?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Clarence?
Yes.
All right, the vote is 7-2 in favor for denial. Affirming your previous action of denial, that motion passes. So that's what happens there. All right, I'm going to go on to the next one. 9974, Jot Hall, at first from the public, submitted a comment A4. So go ahead, John, I'll start you off on that.
Thank you. John Hall, representing Miami-Dade County. Our intent with this alternate language is to convert the mandated of EV, but rather to put it as an appendix that could be adopted by jurisdictions as they wished. That would provide a template for the installation of electrical vehicle charging equipment, and it would also make it easier for jurisdictions that wanted to adopt such provisions to do it one time by adopting the appendix and not have to do local technical amendments and renew them every 3 years. So we think this is a good compromise between what we had been proposing, and we would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Does anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment?
Yes. Pete Quintella, I would support John's proposal. Thank you.
Okay, Pete. Jamie?
Yes, Jamie Gaskin, Miami-Dade County. I think this approach lends itself to the establishment of uniformity across the state. There are a lot of jurisdictions that are developing climate action strategies where gas emissions from vehicles is one of the larger contributing components. So with that, this would allow the establishment of very good uniformity across the state should those jurisdictions wish to adopt something to address the vehicles. So in support of the adoption of an appendix. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support? Okay. Does anybody in the public wish to speak in opposition? All right. I see no opposition. Then I'm going to come back to the TAC for your actions. TAC members?
Yeah, this is Dave Rice. Okay. I just want to put additional clarification on this. This would be in the back of the code. It would only be enforced by the local municipality. Is that correct?
Correct. That's the intent.
If they choose to adopt it.
Okay, that's all I need. Thank you.
Is anybody ready to make a motion, TAC members?
I would move to deny and keep our previous action.
Shane Gerwick, second.
All right, we have a motion and a second for denial. Discussion?
I just want to reiterate my previous comments that this, in some way, would lend credibility to a method that may or may not be necessary or required, and I don't believe that this is a public safety issue that should be part of our code or encouraged to be part of our code.
All right. Any additional talk, discussion?
Comment, knowledge?
There's nothing here that's mandatory. And I think any allusion to that is incorrect and misleading. This is totally voluntary. We have other appendices in the code that are the same way. In fact, we took the exact same limiting language out of the other appendices to draft this comment. So I'm against the motion.
All right, Brian Hall.
Thank you, sir. I'm speaking in opposition to the motion. I think this is a great solution to the comments that were being during our initial TAC meeting. Instead of having the mandate, we put it in the back of the code. This gives the local jurisdictions an opportunity to create them. program if they so choose, and then we'll get consistency across the board. We know that lots of communities are going to start seeing IIJA funding. That funding is going to be specifically identifying opportunities for vehicle charging, and this will give them some guidance points on how to do that. In terms of adding credibility to the Florida Building Code, I'll just mention that the first draft of the 2024 IECC has EV ready requirements mandates in the main body of the code for both the residential and commercial side. So it does look like the next edition of the National Energy Codes are moving forward with an EV ready mandate. So this will at least give us an opportunity to have annex material that can be massaged for future FBC conservation code additions back into the main body of the code. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments before I do a voice vote? Okay. Again, it's a yes or no. If you're in support of the motion, which is to deny and retain your previous action, you would vote yes. If you're opposed to that and want to see the comment approved, you'd vote no. Chuck Fisher.
No.
Okay. Ken Castronovo?
Could you clarify that, please? I'm in denial of the proposed question.
So if you want to maintain the denial, which is where the TAC is right now, then in this case you would vote yes on this proposal.
Yes.
Okay. Vince?
No.
Shane?
Yes.
John?
No.
Brian?
No.
David?
I'm sorry, no.
Joe?
Yes.
Clarence?
Yes.
All right, so the vote is 4-5. That is not a consensus level vote, so that vote fails. However, the motion at this point remains to deny, since that was your previous action. Somebody could make a motion to approve the comments, but likely the vote would end up the same, but that's your choice, or else we move on, because we still have the task recommendation as denial at this point.
All makes a motion for approval of the alternate language.
Rice, second.
All right, we have a motion and a second for approval. I think we've heard the discussion, so let's just go ahead and call the vote again. So in this case, if you approve the comment, which would reverse your action, and send it from denial to approval as an appendix, you would vote yes. And if you want to retain it, you'd vote no. Commissioner Fisher, yes or no?
Yes.
Ken, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Vince, yes or no?
Yes.
That was a yes. Shane, yes or no?
No.
John, yes or no?
Yes.
Brian, yes or no?
Yes.
David, yes or no?
Yes.
Joe, yes or no?
No.
And Clarence, yes or no?
No.
Vote is 6-3 for approval. It passes, so that's the new recommendation is for approval. Okay, then we move on to our next one, which is...
Jeff, was that for A1 or A2?
It's for A4.
Four, and who made the second, please?
I don't recall. I mean, that's not what I do. I'm going to make the first one the second.
I did.
Rice.
You did? David Rice made the second? All right, then let us proceed to the next one, which is 10138. comment G1, but I believe that comment also included an attachment with language, which is Amanda Hickman. So Amanda, we'll turn it to you for your a comment, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Amanda Hickman, the Hickman Group, on behalf for this comment for AHRI. I have the next comment as well on the same issue that I submitted on behalf of Leading Builders of America. I'll kind of talk about both because it's sort of, you know, which way you want to move forward to handle this issue. So we've offered both, you know, and you can certainly, you know, it's up to you to decide which one you prefer. So first I have to offer apologies because the first time you took up this issue, I was quarantined in my hotel room at the meeting with COVID, so I wasn't able to make it down. And I think there was some confusion about what the intent of these modifications essentially are trying to do. So we have, you know, the National Electric Code is being brought in by reference to the 2020 version, and embedded in that is this GFCI requirement for outdoor outlets. Now, some of the past modifications that you've been discussing today, there's kind of, you know, this potential conflict, you know, between the fire prevention code. So I want to make it clear that these are only addressing the residential side. So, you know, we'd have to take this up in a separate process with the fire prevention code on the commercial side. So these do not address that. And so there would be no conflict between these two modifications. So this modification in front of you now, 10138, essentially deletes the section which has the embedded GFCI requirement for outdoor outlets. That's 210.8F. The next one adds an exception to exempt listed HVAC equipment. And so I just cannot stress enough what a significant problem this is. And if we don't take action now, and this goes into the Florida code as is, we are set to take on a problem that's seen, you know, it's been a widespread problem throughout the country. You know, we were first alerted of this the summer of 2020 in Texas because they were early to adopt the 2020 NEC with this provision. And right away, there was nuisance stripping just everywhere, so much to the extent that, you know, there were variances that had, you know, solutions, that no solution, workaround solution exists. There is no solution to this problem, and that's because there is the two technologies, GFCI, HVAC equipment, other equipment, they're just not harmonized.
You have 30 seconds. I just wanted to give you that warning.
Okay, thanks. So essentially, nuisance stripping occurs, which is a tripping that has no hazard to it. And Texas actually had to take emergency action and deleted this provision out of their code. So that's where Texas is now. And now we are set in Florida to take up this this new requirement, which has no working solution to date. In fact, the NFPA Standards Council recently recognized this in their most recent action.
Wrap
okay.
Real quick. I'll give you another couple seconds. Go ahead.
Thank you. With the Standards Action that the NFPA issued, they sustained two appeals that were filed, three appeals that were filed, and issued two TIAs essentially exempting listed HVAC equipment. So, again, this mod in front of you now deletes the language. The next one adds an exception consistent with the Standards Action, the Standards Council action that was recently taken. So I will leave it at that and hope you support this mod or the next. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joe.
Joe Belcher, Florida Homebuilders Association. We request approval of either this one or the next one. They both accomplish the same thing from our standpoint. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Yes, this is Bill Koffel.
Okay, go ahead.
Bill Koffel, I'm with Koffel Associates, consultant both AHRI and LBA. Today I'll be speaking on behalf of LBA. And I just want to continue the discussion that Amanda started with regard to what has happened in the NFPA process. A year ago, the Standards Council issued a TIA on the 2020 edition that was very limited in scope, but at the same time recognized there was not a true solution to the problem and had a task group appointed very broad interest from home builders to HVAC manufacturers to receptacle manufacturers, CPSC, members of CMP2, et cetera. That task group developed the two TIAs that Amanda's talked about, and one TIA is to the 2020 edition, one TIA is to the 2023 edition, and therefore I should be published in the 2023 edition since they were acted upon at the August council meeting. So in some of the previous discussions here this afternoon, there's been talk about letting it go through the NFPA process. This has, and you would simply be adopt if you accept, and I encourage you to accept the second one, that language is closest to the TIA language. If you do that, you would be adopting the code as it has been modified at NFPA through the TIA process. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment?
Yes. David Bixby. David Bixby, Air Conditioning Contractors of America. We participated on the NFPA Standards Council's task group on GFCI, and we support either proposal, although, as the last person just stated, probably the second proposal to make it an exception is closest to the approved and published NFPA TIA for the 2020 edition. Our contractors were between a rock and a hard place as far as they had to comply with the code and install a GFCI, and then when they didn't work, the homeowners were saying, why does this keep tripping? And they couldn't do anything about it because they were bound, they could not go against the code, and so therefore people took other measures on their own to try to maybe bypass this and make it work. And again, that in and of itself is a safety issue as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment? All right, is there anybody in the public that wishes to speak in opposition to the comment? I see none. I'm going to come to our TAC now for your action on 10138, comment 2-1.
Motion to deny, Holland.
Second by Hall.
All right, I have a motion, a second, Holland and Hall, respectively, for denial, which would be, in essence, to retain your previous action. Discussion on the motion?
Yes, Holland, comment.
All right, Holland, and then David Wright.
Thank you. So as the speaker said, this is the argument taken care of at the NFPA level. TIA 20-19 is published. That is now the 2020 NEC. So when the 2020 NEC goes in effect here in the state of Florida on 12/31/23, that new exception number 2 is in effect. Ground fault circuit interrupter protection shall not be required for listed HVAC equipment, and this exception shall expire on September 1st, 2026. I just want to remind the group that TIAs work differently now at the NFPA. During the 7th and subsequent previous editions of the Florida Building Code, the 2020 was a published document, and then TIAs kind of sat out there on their own and had to be adopted and enforced independently of the code. The NFPA process changed in that TIAs, once issued, actually changed the code. So if you go on to NFPA Link, if you go into the NFPA free subscription, if you have the National Fire Subscription Service, you will see that 210.8F has been permanently modified. The official NEC requirement is the new exception number 2. So the work's been done for us. We don't need to do anything else. That is the rule that will go into effect when the 2020 NEC, in addition to all other 18 TIAs, and we haven't addressed those as a committee ever. So I think the work's already been done. I agree with exception number 2 to TIA 20-19, so no work needs to be done on this one or the next. Thank you.
All right, David.
Okay, I think he had my notes. I agree with everything that he said. So just go on from here. Thank you.
All right, unless there's any further discussion, I'm going to go ahead and call for the vote, which is for denial. I'm going to take a chance here and say all in favor of denial, say aye.
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 Are there any opposed?
Yes.
All right. So the vote is 8-1 in favor of denial, so it passes. So that retains the tech's previous action of denial. All right, next we go to the 10149, which is a similar one, only it's, as they described it, as an exception as opposed to the way it was done in the code before. Amanda, again, it would be helpful to hit new points if you can in terms of everybody's comments. So go ahead, Amanda.
Sure. Amanda Hickman, the Hickman Group, on behalf of Leading Builders of America. First, I just want to say, in light of the testimony that Brian Holland just gave, can we confirm that is how Florida will handle the TIA? Because in asking staff previously, you know, we were told we needed to come forward with modifications.
So
can we get a question on that? No. Yeah, this is Mo Madani. The NEC, you know, we, as you know, we adopt the NEC by reference. So, and we are adopting the 2020. If there's an amendment, the code has not been adopted yet or went into effect. So any amendment to the NEC in this case would be part, to me, it would be part of the code at this point, will be part of the 2020 NEC. So if what Brian has said is correct, then yeah, you know, I think it will be part of the NEC.
Okay.
I paused your time, so I'm going to go ahead and restart you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah, I guess my question is, if Brian is correct, is the question. And so this is sort of a good segue into this modification, because this is the language that is most consistent with the recent action taken by the NFPA Standards Council in that TIA. And so even if Brian is correct, this does not conflict with that. This is essentially that same exception. And if Brian is correct, well, then he's correct, and that's the language that's in the 2020 NEC that Florida just adopts by reference. So I don't see the harm in approving this, so that we for sure have something to address a very significant problem. And if we don't need it, we don't need it. But there's not a conflict here. And so I would encourage reversal of the denial and to accept this. And if we find out at a later point we really don't need it, we could take it out. Or like I said, if it moves forward, it's not in conflict. So, I think what a lot of other folks recommended, that they, of the two options, this was the preferred since it is closest to the Standards Council. IA. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Amanda. All right, does anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Belcher, Bill Koppel.
All right, Mr. Belcher and then Mr. Koppel. Joe and then Bill.
Just quickly, Florida Home Builders Association supports the modification. As Brian mentioned, NFPA has changed their process. However, the 2020 NEC is already available. A lot of contractors have probably already bought the 2020 NEC. We don't know at what point, when this TIA is finally finalized, they'll actually show up. So that means you have to belong to I forget the name of it, but Brian did mention it. I do belong to it, where you can go online and look at the NEC or any other NFPA code. But a lot of people don't bother, or they're not even aware of it, let alone bother with it. So by putting this in the code, we're basically saying what NEC is going to say when they finally print it out in the 2023 edition, which we are not adopting as yet. And we need to have this in the code so that we don't have a problem with this nuisance stripping. It actually is a very large problem in a state with our heat and humidity. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Mr. Koppel, go ahead.
Bill Koppel, Koppel Associates, representing LBA. I would offer, and I'm not an attorney, that Mr. Holland's comments are partially correct. If we were adopting the 2023 edition, he is correct. The TIA is published within the edition. Since we're adopting the 2020 edition, that is not a true statement. Yes, NFPA considers it part of the code. However, a state cannot give that revision process to a party like NFPA. You have to identify what you are adopting. And what other states and federal agencies do with TIAs is they specifically say they are adopting the code with the TIA, or they're silent on it, which means they did not adopt the TIA. As Joe mentioned, there are many copies of the NEC out there, 2020 edition, that do not have the TIA in it. So to sit in this meeting and say, well, everybody will know it's the TIA is part of what Florida has adopted, is going to create tremendous confusion. I agree with Amanda. You can adopt it if at the time, or you can accept this modification, if at the time of final adoption, it's determined that it will be very clear that the TIA is included, then that's fine. But if we don't specifically adopt this modification of the TIA, I would offer that the state of Florida would be bound by the 2020 edition as originally processed through NFPA 3 years ago. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment?
This is David Bixby with ACCA. I just want to clarify that what we're looking at on the screen would exempt only HVAC equipment employing power conversion equipment. Is that true? That's what I'm reading. The current NFPA Standards Council TIA has an exemption for all HVAC equipment, regardless of whether it uses power conversion technology as a means to control compressor speed, because we have tripping issues on single stage equipment. We have tripping on ECM fan motors. So this is looks like the old TIA to the 2020 code, not the new one. So I just wanted to clarify what you're voting for here. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, Scott, go ahead.
Yes, this is Scott. I just want to quickly address the issue, and we probably should put it off the table, the issue of first printings not having TIAs. That's the same situation as we have with the Florida Building Code. The first printing does not have the supplement, and not everybody is aware of the supplement, so it's really the same thing. In our industry, you need to keep up with the code. And if you're an electrician or electrical engineer, you need to keep up with the NEC and know the processes. So just quickly, I wanted to mention that. Thank you.
All right, Scott. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support?
Joe Belcher, I need to address Scott's statement just there, if I may. I don't think I used my 3 minutes.
Well, that's not usually how we do it, Joe. Anybody wish to speak in opposition? And I would say that any that TAC member, the chair, or anybody, if they want to ask a question or something, they can certainly do so and ask you that point. But I think procedurally, we just need to be consistent. Okay. Then, hearing no additional comment, I will come to the TAC, and TAC members are free to ask. One second. I heard a lot of different things at once. Mo, did you say something?
Yes. I just want to make sure. We need Amanda to clarify something. We're taking up 10149, which has the original text and it has an A1. Are we assuming you're going with the original text? Am I correct, Amanda?
No, I'm sorry. It's A1. So what David Bixby mentioned in his comment, we were looking at the original. So if you look at A1, sorry if I was not clear on that. That is the text that's more similar to the standard section. The standard
section. A1. Okay. You just A1 of. Okay. One zero.
Right. That's what I had noted here too. That it was A1. Okay. All right then. Sure, Jeff. You go ahead then.
I thought I might want to just chime in since there's been some discussion that I think is relevant on the legal consideration. I was taking down some notes about what Mr. Holland was saying with respect to the TIA and its incorporation into the NEC. And some of the comments are brought up, I believe, by Mr. Kossel. I mean, I share some concerns with Mo pretty much addressed my suspicions on how any changes to the NEC would be handled. It would probably depend on the timing of when they were adopted, but the NEC can't be sort of changed after it has been adopted by the Florida, by the state of Florida. Changes that have occurred after that adoption, I think they, it could be legally problematic as far as whether or not they're automatically incorporated into the Florida Building Code or potentially the Florida Fire Prevention Code. And so I'm going to look into the topic some more, but I wouldn't assume necessarily that whatever the changes are will necessarily be applicable to what the state of Florida adopts. And so as long as we're dealing with something in, you know, the residential code that's not going to create some kind of conflict, then it might be safer to incorporate those changes if we're allowed to do it from a technical point of view.
So in essence, 1 second. After December 13th or 14th, that's whatever the commission adopts is likely what stays at this point. That's what Justin is saying. He'll check into it to verify. But that seems like the, and historically, the way it's happened. So I'm going to stack a list of folks. I have Shane wanted to speak first. Who else wants to speak?
David.
Committee members.
David?
Anybody else?
Follow-up question for Mr. Volk.
All right.
Yeah,
if you have a question, all right. If you have a question, I'm going to go ahead and get you first, Brian. If it's just a question, but for discussion, we'll start with Shane and then Dave. So Brian, you want to ask Justin a question? Let's do that first.
Yeah, the question is, if we incorporate this change, like we physically write it down somewhere, where does that go? We can't modify the NEC in Florida. It's a reference document. So everybody that has a published book, we're not going to go find all those books and add the exception. So where does it go? My assumption is we dump it into Chapter 27 of the FBCD, which means people would have to go there, which is about the same, you know, burden as going to the CIA. So I'm confused where we actually would make this change to a section. Thank you.
This is Mo Megdani. If it's okay, I can answer the question. I think really, if you look at the original modification for 10149, it amends section E3408, which is mainly the chapter or in the residential code. That, so it's really just putting this in the residential code under chapter E34, under section 3. E3408, not 20, chapter 27. So chapter 27 is for buildings. So
same idea, though. You would have to go to the FBCR, go all the way back to Part 8, and find that rule.
Right. You're kind of going into discussion. I think your question was a good question. I think Mo answered the question. Justin, you want to add anything else to the answer?
No, I was going to refer that to Mo. He would know best.
Okay. Then, Ken, you have a question, not a discussion point. Is that correct?
Yeah, hi. Would it be better if we, you know, there's a lot of discussion here, would it be better to have a committee on sort of ironing this thing out? Amo?
At this point, I think we're kind of moving forward with the, there's
okay,
something.
No, it's kind of clear it now, so you don't want
to. Yeah,
a lot of discussion here.
Shane and then David.
Very good. Thanks, Jeff, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. So as we take a look at this, you know, basically what we've heard is there's kind of questions as far as from a legal perspective of the TIA actually becoming permanent as far as that's concerned, the way that works in Florida. You know, if this language is the same as the TIA or very extremely similar to the TIA, I don't see what the harm is in going and go ahead and adopting this language. I mean, it makes it consistent with the code, it makes it consistent with the NFPA's intentions, and it doesn't trap us into a legal loophole. So with that right there, I will make a motion in support of the comment.
Commissioner Fisher, second.
We have a motion and a second from Shane Gerwig and Commissioner Fisher for approval of the A1, of, which is part of the G1 comment. The full discussion, David, you're next.
Okay. As far as the TIA goes, I'm an electrical engineer, and I use the TIAs all the time. You can't build pedestals in a marina with using the TIA. So as soon as the TIA is issued, that's the code, and that's what we follow. And I've never been questioned about using the TIA. Like I said, I use it frequently. Every marina being built today is based on TIAs. It's a quite a common occurrence. And so, you know, whenever I keep informed about every TIA that's associated with NFPA 70. The concern that I have with the proposal is basically is that the proposal is basically the same as the TIA. Okay, that's not saying that it's the same. And I have a real problem in possibly changing the NEC. So I would be against any changes on this. It can easily be changed with the TIA. Anybody in the industry has access to the TIA. That it's not difficult to use. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion from TAC members before I call the vote?
Yes, just a quick question for Brian. Did I misunderstand this TIA that you're talking about is coming out in the 2020 code? Correct.
It's already published. It's issued.
It's issued for the 2020, and it will be incorporated permanently in the 2023. Is that what I heard you say?
It's permanent in both. So the TIA is for both 2019, TIA 2020, and TIA 20-23, or 23-3 is the one that's for the 23, sorry. Lots of numbers.
Right.
In short, it's permanent for both codes, yes.
All right, Joe, is there any other?
No, I think that answered the question I had. Then, again, if the language is not identical, it sounds like the TIA is actually a little more forgiving and would be a better thing to adopt than this language.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go ahead and ask you if you vote yes, if you support the amendment, which would reverse your previous action. If you want to maintain the denial, you vote no. Commissioner Fisher, yes or no?
Could you clarify that one more time, Jeff, please?
Sure. So if you vote yes, you're voting to approve the comment.
I vote yes.
Jeff, I'm sorry, point of order. Could you just...
Wait, there's no point of order. Sorry, Amanda. We don't take points of order from the public. So please don't say anything at this time.
Okay.
Thank you. Point of order is only given by a member of the committee. In Robert's rules, we don't really follow that, but we don't take stuff at order. We're in the middle of a vote. Commissioner Fisher voted yes. Ken Castronova. Ken, yes or no?
No.
Vince, yes or no?
No.
Shane, yes or no?
Yes.
John, yes or no?
No.
Ryan, yes or no?
No.
David, yes or no?
No.
Joe, yes or no?
No.
Clarence, yes or no?
No.
All right. The vote is 2-7. Obviously, it fails, and the tax recommendation for denial is what is retained. Okay. All right. Then we move on to the next, which is 10244. There was a comment A3 submitted by Mr. Joe Belcher. Mr. Belcher, Joe, go ahead. You're on mute, Joe.
Trying to get my cursor over there. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead. I won't start.
Well, in light of all the other discussion we had here, I just want to briefly say that I looked at the NFPA data, and it says that 92% of kitchen fires are caused by cooking, while only 1% are caused by electrical sources. I looked at all the Florida fire marshal reports. I could find no reference at all to arc fault type fires in kitchens. So what we're requesting is that you remove the arc fault requirement from kitchens and laundry rooms. I know in my laundry room I have a 24 cubic foot freezer that has a lot of grass-fed beef in it. It's very expensive. I would not want a ground fault trip to spoil my beef. And we're asking that you reverse your position on this and approve the change.
All
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else in the public wish to speak in support of the comment?
Hey, Jeff, this is Mo. There is also there's two comments, A2 and A3. I just want to make sure we address both.
Right. Okay. Commissioner Fisher, I believe, submitted A2. Anybody else wish to speak in support? We're speaking to A3 at this time. Anybody wish to speak in opposition? All right. Commissioner Fisher, do you want to speak to your comment before we come back to the TAC and follow the same process? I think we'll have comments on two alternatives in the TAC and decide how to proceed.
I'm not going to rehash everything that I've already said. We've already been through that. I think it's kind of interesting that we just spent a lot of time dealing with nuisance tripping for HVAC equipment outside, and it's such an important issue, but yet we don't really want to seem to address the nuisance tripping at our calls, which I think is just as big of an issue. So therefore, I would like to vote in support of my alternate language.
Okay, does anybody else wish to speak in support of A2? Anybody in opposition? All right, so we come back to the TAC. We have two alternates on the table. We can vote for...
Motion. Motion deny comment A2 and A3, Holly.
Deb, second.
All right, we have a motion to deny both comments from Holland and Tibbs, respectively. Discussion on either or both of those?
Yes, comment Holland.
Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, sir. So I think A2, just a repeat, it's exactly the same as 10220. So I think we covered some of the flaws in that one in terms of the terminology being used and what it would exclude. My concerns with A3 are similar in that we were excluding two places that the wiring methods and materials are the same. And the argument that, well, because one type of activity causes more fires, then we can eliminate the reduction of fires somewhere else by something else. That's kind of a flawed logic because since we've had kitchens as a requirement for ASCI protection, perhaps that's why we don't have fires from branch circuits to kitchens. So it's probably doing its job. This proposal, by the way, kitchens and laundries, this has been attempted at the national level. They've attempted at the 17, 20, and 23 cycles. CMP2 has never accepted those. There's never been substantiation to remove it. And the last thing I'll say about fire stats, you will not find a single stat that shows that a fire has ever occurred on a branch circuit protected by AFCI protection. So I think that's a powerful statement. We have to protect the branch circuit wiring, not just the spaces that they supply. So asking for support to deny both comments. Thank you.
All right. Any additional discussion? All right. Then I'm going to go ahead and as a yes or no, the vote is in favor of denial, which is retaining your previous action. It's relevant to both comments. Commissioner Fisher, yes or no?
No.
Ken, yes or no?
Yes.
Vince, yes or no?
Yes.
Shane, yes or no?
No.
John, yes or no?
Yes.
Brian, yes or no?
Yes.
David, yes or no?
Yes.
Joe, yes or no?
Yes.
Clarence, yes or no?
Yes.
All right, well, the vote is, as expected, 7-2 in favor of denial, which is retaining your previous action of denial, so that stands as your recommendation to the commission. Okay, well, that concludes our review of the comments that were submitted on your recommendation to the commission. Is there any additional public comment? TAC member or staff member comment?
Yes, Mr. Blair, let's make a comment, Holly.
Sure, Brian, go ahead.
Thank you. Just want to say that I hope everybody is safe and sound from Hurricane Ian. As a Charlotte County resident, 18 years after Charlie and a couple years after Irma, I'm still impressed by how effective Florida Building Code is in protecting citizens in the built environment. So I hope you're all being electrically safe, and if there's anything that I or anybody can be doing to help restore your communities in terms of electricity, resiliency, and future safety, please reach out to me. I'm happy to help. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. All right. Anybody else? Otherwise, Commissioner Fisher, sir, if you would adjourn us.
I'd like to thank all the TAC members and the public for their time today in reviewing all this, and with that, I'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
This conference.